Pull out your sectional chart, any one you've got handy. Now, find the biggest, boldest number sitting inside one of those grid squares, the one printed in blue that looks like a little fraction. That number just told you the single most important thing on the whole chart, and I'd bet a fair number of licensed pilots couldn't tell you exactly what it means. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern, the show where we try to make you a sharper, safer pilot one topic at a time. And today, while half the aviation world is parked on the grass at Oshkosh for AirVenture, I want to talk about how you actually get there, not the arrival, not the FISC approach. The part before that, the cross-country planning that happens at your kitchen table with a paper chart, a pencil, and a cup of coffee going cold next to you. Because here's the thing. Everybody obsesses over the AirVenture arrival procedure, and they should. It's demanding. But I've watched more trips to Oshkosh fall apart 200 miles out than anywhere near Ripon bad checkpoint choices, an altitude that put somebody uncomfortably close to terrain they never saw coming, a route that looked fine on the little screen but made no sense in the actual sky. So let's walk through this together. Sectional charts, checkpoints, and that mysterious blue number. Before we dig in, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of this journey we're all on. Got your first solo behind you? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, the ones that don't always get the celebration they deserve. AviationSoul.com, go take a look. All right, let's start with that blue number, because it's the one I promised you. It's called the maximum elevation figure. Pilots call it the MEEF. And it lives inside every one of those latitude and longitude quadrangles on your sectional. Those boxes bounded by the thin blue lines, the MEF represents the height above sea level of the highest obstruction inside that box. That could be terrain, a mountain, a ridge, or it could be a man-made obstacle, a broadcast tower, that kind of thing. Now here's the part people get wrong. The way it's printed looks like a fraction, but it isn't. The top number is thousands of feet. The bottom number is hundreds. So if you see a 5 stacked on top of a 2, that is not 5 over 2, that is 5,200 feet. Read it wrong and you've just talked yourself into an altitude that doesn't clear the highest thing in that box, and there's a safety buffer baked into it that's worth understanding. When the chart makers calculate the MEF, they take the highest known feature and then they add a margin to account for the fact that the feature's exact height might have some tolerance in the survey and to account for obstacles that might be just below the charting threshold. So the MEF is deliberately conservative. It is the number that says, cross this box at or above me, and nothing in here is going to hurt you. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. On a cross country, before I ever pick a cruising altitude, I run my finger down the whole route, box by box, and I find the highest MEF anywhere near my line of flight. That's my floor. Whatever altitude I choose has to sit comfortably above it, not right on top of it. Above it with room to breathe. Now let's connect that to a rule, because there's a regulation that works hand in hand with the MEF. Federal Aviation Regulation 9159, the VFR Cruising Altitude Rule. A lot of students memorize this for the knowledge test, and then promptly forget why it exists. Here's the simple version. When you're in level cruise more than 3,000 feet above the surface, your altitude depends on your magnetic course. Flying an easterly heading, anything from 0 to 179 degrees, you fly odd thousands plus 500. 3,500, people call it the hemispheric rule, and the whole point is separation. Everybody going roughly your direction is at your kind of altitude, and everybody coming at you is 1,000 feet off. It's a simple, elegant way to keep airplanes from meeting in the middle. So now watch how these two things work together on a real trip. Say you're flying into Oshkosh from the southwest. A magnetic course somewhere around 040. That's easterly. So the rule gives you odd thousands plus 500. Your candidates are 3,500, 5,500, 7,500. Now you go back to your sectional and check the MEFs along the route. If the highest one is, say, 2,800, then 3,500 technically clears it, but that's only 700 feet of margin over the worst obstacle, and that's tight. 5,500 gives you real breathing room and it satisfies the rule. That's your altitude. The chart and the regulation agreed, and you made a decision instead of just picking a number that felt about right. Wisconsin, I'll grant you, is not exactly the Rockies. The terrain heading into Oshkosh is gentle, but this discipline, this habit of letting the MEF set your floor and the cruising rule set your options. That's the muscle you want built before you ever fly somewhere that does have mountains. Build the habit on the easy trip so it's automatic on the hard one. Let's move to the other half of today's topic, checkpoints. When you plan a cross-country, you're drawing a line and then picking features along that line to confirm you're where you think you are. This is pilotage, navigating by looking outside at the ground. And I know, you've got a moving map. You've got GPS. You've got a tablet that draws a little magenta airplane right on your route. So why are we still talking about checkpoints? Two reasons. One, the examiner is looking for it. It's right there in the Airman Certification Standards for the cross-country navigation task. You're expected to navigate by pilotage and dead reckoning. And two, the day your battery dies or your GPS drops out, checkpoints are what get you home. The magenta line is a wonderful helper and a terrible master. So how do you pick a good checkpoint?
Here's where a lot of students go wrong. They pick things that look great on the chart and are nearly invisible from the air.
Let me give you the rule I teach. A good checkpoint is something you can identify from several miles away, something unique and something that lines up with your route. Let's break those down. Unique matters more than big. A single small town out in the middle of farmland is a fantastic checkpoint because there's nothing else around to confuse it with, but one town in a cluster of five similar towns? Useless. You'll never know which one you're looking at. Same problem with a road. A lone highway crossing your course at an angle? Wonderful. One road in a grid of a dozen identical section line roads? Forget it. Think about what actually stands out from 3,000 feet. Water is the champion. A distinctive lake, the bend in a river, a reservoir with an odd shape. Water is dark, it's obvious, and its shape is unmistakable. Wisconsin, lucky for us, is absolutely covered in lakes. And heading into Oshkosh, you've got Lake Winnebago itself, which is a giant, impossible-to-miss slab of water sitting right next to Whitman Regional Airport. That lake is arguably the best checkpoint in the whole state. After water, I like the intersection of two linear features. A highway crossing a railroad, a river crossing a road, because a single line only tells you that you're somewhere along it. But where two lines cross, that's a point, that's a fix, that tells you exactly where you are. Towers and antennas can work, but be careful. They're small, and they can be hard to spot until you're close. And by then, they've stopped being a navigation aid and started being an obstacle. Which, by the way, brings us right back to the MEF. That tall tower you picked as a checkpoint might be the very thing that's driving the maximum elevation figure in that box. Everything on the chart connects. Now here's a practical piece. Space your checkpoints about every 10 to 15 nautical miles on a typical training airplane. Close enough that you're never flying long stretches wondering where you are, far enough apart that you're not heads down in the cockpit constantly. And pick your checkpoints during planning at the table and write them on your navigation log with the time you expect to reach each one. Then in the air, all you're doing is confirming. Airplane, meet lake, right on schedule. That's a calm cockpit. That's a pilot in command who knows exactly where they are. Let me give you a scenario, because that's how this stuff actually sticks. You're a student, maybe 40 hours, flying your longer cross-country, and you've routed yourself toward the Oshkosh area during the show week. You did your homework. You picked a distinctive lake at your halfway point, a highway railroad crossing three quarters of the way, and Lake Winnebago as your big terminal landmark. You noted the highest MEF along the route and picked a cruising altitude that clears it with margin and satisfies 9159. Now you're airborne. You reach the lake and your watch says you're 2 minutes early. Great information that tells you the wind is helping you more than forecast, so your ground speed is up and every remaining leg is going to come a little sooner than planned. You adjust your time estimates, no panic, no confusion, just a small correction based on a checkpoint doing exactly its job. That is the whole game. The checkpoint doesn't just tell you where you are, it tells you what the air is doing to you, and it lets you update your plan in real time. A GPS ground speed readout gives you the number, sure, but the checkpoint gives you the understanding, and understanding is what makes you the pilot the examiner wants to sign off. One more thing before I let you go, and it ties the whole trip together. As you get close to the Oshkosh area during air venture, the airspace gets busy and the arrival procedure takes over. But everything we talked about today feeds directly into flying that arrival well. You already know your altitude is right because you did the MEF and cruising altitude work. You already know your position cold because you've been running checkpoints the whole way. So when it's time to descend and slow down and find the railroad tracks and the water tower that everybody's looking for, you arrive at that moment relaxed ahead of the airplane, with your head up and outside where it belongs. The pilot who's been guessing for 200 miles arrives at Ripon frazzled. The pilot who planned arrives ready. That's cross-country planning. It's not glamorous. It's a paper chart and a sharp pencil and the discipline to do it before you fly, instead of figuring it out on the way. The regulations I reference come straight from the Federal Aviation Regulations and the standards from the FAA's Airman Certification Standards, and the chart conventions are right there in the FAA's Aeronautical Chart User's Guide, which is free and worth every minute you spend with it. You can find more from the show at radiohanger.com. So this week, whether you're flying to Oshkosh or just around the pattern, go pull out your sectional and find that biggest blue number. Now you know what it's telling you. I'm Pattern. Fly safe, and I'll see you next time.